Asinine Radio. This is the weekly music podcast where every week we get into a different band, different artist, and we break it down.
Movie?
Well, also movies. And this week, we're in soundtrack season. We're back with soundtrack season. We had to take a week off, but we're back. And this week we're getting into the Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou. Zissou? I don't know. Wes Anderson movie. So that's what we're getting into. We're getting into the soundtrack. So we're going to get into the breakdown of that as well as parts of the movie as well, because why the hell not? My name is Tyler, and way out there, hundreds of miles away, is Jeff. While you're listening, go to Spotify, Apple Podcasts, give us 5 stars to all your friends. Smash that subscribe button on the YouTube.
Smash that subscribe button,
smash
baby.
Smash that subscribe button, baby, on the YouTubes. Go do that. and tell your friends, share the videos, whatever. You know, let's get into it. Let's get into,
you know, like
what?
Sorry,
no.
To death.
Yeah, I'm bored too.
You know, like anyway. You know, like YouTube, you can't post like nudity, right? You can't do nudity on YouTube.
Correct.
Can you drink?
Yeah, you could drink, but it might affect you like monetary wise, like with or monetization with certain ads. But
I don't know. If you drink or
if like, there's alcohol,
what about labels?
No, labels I believe are fine. But yeah, anyway. So yeah, I got some Budweiser.
I think patriotic. I feel like people who wear tiny like glasses, you know what I mean? Like little tiny like lenses like this.
Yes.
Are usually like villains in TV shows and movies.
Yeah. Like with the monocle.
Or not just a monocle, but like tiny glasses. Like you never see like the good guy or the good guy's helper wear tiny glasses. If the good guy has a helper that wears glasses, they're always kind of like oversized, kind of like nerdy black sunglasses.
True.
But smaller glasses like that kind of is like villainous.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Why are you thinking about this?
Because I was doing like this thing and I was like, damn, I look like a villain.
Okay.
And I thought like, oh, all villains wear small glasses.
What an observation. So
that's what I do, baby boy.
Let's get into this. We're doing The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou, Wes Anderson movie. We're really going to break down the soundtrack mostly because the movie.
What is wrong with the movie?
We'll get into that. We'll get into that soon. So let's get into our origin story with the movie and also subsequently the soundtrack. So what's your origin story with The Life Aquatic? Go.
Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou.
Yes.
I don't know. I saw it in theaters.
Did you really?
This is like, yeah. Oh. I really do like this movie a lot. Like I really, really like it. I haven't seen all of Wes Anderson's stuff. So I'm not like a diehard Wes Anderson guy, but I've seen like, I think, 4 of them, right?
Which is a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. I think he has like 10 or something like that. So I've seen a good chunk of them. This one just, I think this one's unique. I think this one's bizarre. I think this is in a good way. I think this is very, very boring and dry and basic. And just everything about this is just so like this is what you put out, really? Yeah. But like, that's what the point was. The point was to be very basic. The point was just to tell a little story. Whether or not the story is interesting or not is kind of like beside the point, because we're watching this thing unfold of a guy who we don't even kind of like that much. Like Bill Murray's character is not very likable in this movie.
No.
Until like that very, very end scene. It's like, oh, I got you, bro. I got you. But otherwise, like, no, he's not very likable. Like, no, nothing about this movie is anything interesting. It's just, I don't know. It was cool. It was fun. It was exciting.
Okay. All right. I know I did not see this in theaters. I saw this on DVD after it came out, was released. That was the last time I had seen this. I hadn't seen it since then, since it came out on DVD. And I remember liking it a lot back then, but I think, my voice cracked. But I think it was because, I was, we were 18 years old, so we thought we were cool, this little indie film, the Royal Tenenbaums, there's that guy. And so yeah, that's my origin story, is watching on DVD. I don't remember who I watched it with. Maybe watch it by myself. Who knows? But I just remembered enjoying it back then. But man, this week, it's not a good movie, man. It's not good. Not good.
It's not a focus. So like off the bat, hands down, this is not a bad movie. Wes Anderson, from what I've seen and what other people have talked about his other films. He has not made a bad movie. This is not a bad movie. At worst, this movie is just like, what the fuck is this? This did not need to be made.
Out of what I've seen, this is the worst.
But it's not a bad movie.
It's kind of bad. It's kind of bad.
The
acting is atrocious. I mean, it's bad. Bill Murray is terrible in this. And Owen Wilson, oh my God, dude.
Okay.
Dude. Also, what it comes down to is Wes Anderson's directing is that he's doing a lot of shots of just single shots without any cuts. So there's a lot of,
I love those.
There's a shit ton of dead air, but it's fine to have dead air. Like, a lot of directors do it really well, but because neither of them are very good actors, the dead air is uncomfortable and it's very forced, and they don't know how to carry the conversation. And I guess that comes down to bad writing as well, but dude, and what's weird is like a lot of those shots were only in the first half of the movie or the first like quarter of the movie. And then after that, it becomes much more, it becomes a lot more choppy and more traditional from like a filmmaking standpoint. But yeah, dude, it's just, dude, the acting and Owen Wilson, the accent is one of the worst things I've ever heard.
It comes and goes.
Dude, it's so fucking bad. It's terrible. Terrible.
It comes and goes. It's all right.
Oh man.
But again, I think Bill Murray slays his character. This is like a lovable loser, but more loser than lovable. And Bill Murray like slays that role. He does a really good job with that because Bill Murray's kind of an ugly dude.
Oh yeah.
He's not like an attractive man in any way, shape, or form. So already off the bat, whenever he's kind of like slumped over and sitting down and his shoulders are sagging, he looks like a fucking loser, man. He looks like a loser that you just don't want to root for. And he makes so many bad decisions throughout the course of this movie. And his entire like purpose in this movie is just revenge. And that's that's a shitty purpose for somebody who is supposed to be like a Jacques Cousteau. Mm-hmm. That's a very, very shitty thing. And that's why it's so nice to get that final thing like, nah, I'm not going to kill that shark.
Yeah.
And that was cool. I liked that a lot. That was a great story point. I'm glad we went there. But I don't know. I think just all of these boring characters, all of these, who gives a fuck about these characters come together in this kind of like Goonies-esque, you know, ship escapade. And it's fun. It's fun and it's exciting. And I think above all else, the set pieces were amazing. Probably my favorite set pieces of all I think I've seen four Wes Anderson movies. Mm-hmm. So my favorite like set pieces of all four of the movies that I've seen him do. My favorite colors. I like all the colors he's using. He's very like monochromatic in what he does with colors. There's a lot of bright colors here. And then like the stop motion shit, man. That was fantastic.
He loves doing the stop motion stuff.
Like, this I always was, thought like, it the was shit. Like, but like the guy that did the stop motion here, the dude like directed Night Before Christmas, right? Mm-hmm. The guy like knows stop motion. The best. It's good.
That part of it is good.
It's great.
But I couldn't get over the choppy writing and the bad acting. It was too much. The only good actor in the whole movie was Willem Dafoe. That was it. He was the only good actor in this entire movie.
I mean, Kate Blanchett's a good actress. She's good.
She was fine.
Angelica Houston's good.
But their roles suck. Kate Blanchett's role, her character kind of just, it was pointless.
She's reduced to like a damsel in distress.
That's exactly what it was. It was just, it was silly. It was dumb. And I can't get over Owen Wilson, man. He was so bad in this movie. He's terrible in this
so
movie.
Good.
It's so bad. Oh,
I think
man.
That's purposeful, though. I think it's purposeful because that accent was so bad. Like, there's no way Owen Wilson could have done that. And they're homies, right? Like Wes Anderson, Owen Wilson, they're homies. So, like, he's going to get that part no matter what. And I think it was just funny. It was cute.
Mm. It was something. It was something.
This should be a funny movie. It's a fun movie. Dude, none of Wes Anderson's movies, like, are tripling, quadrupling their money. They're not doing, like, Marvel fucking numbers here.
You're right.
They're barely making budget at that. People just like it because, like, he's a cool director. He does cool shit. Like those single shots, man, that at the party when they're doing like the little fucking, when Bill Murray and Owen Wilson are talking at the party, like that single shot, it's like 4 minutes long.
Oh yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's unreal.
Yeah. It's cool. But like I said, it's cool in some movies, but in this, it didn't work because the two actors did not play they couldn't do it. Those types of things aren't meant for these guys. And like I said, some of it might come down to the writing as well, because the writing was kind of bad. Some of the dialogue was pretty fucking bad. But I don't know, man. I think I've seen all of his movies except for The Fantastic Mr. Fox. I haven't seen Rushmore, his first movie,
and I
haven't seen Asteroid City, his newest one.
Damn, he's a fuck ton of movies.
Yeah, so I've
he's like 15 movies.
No, he really 15.
Yeah, so like I've only seen Life Aquatic, seen Royal Tenenbaums, I've seen Rushmore, and then I've seen Budapest Hotel.
Budapest Hotel's really good too. I like that one a lot.
Yeah, Budapest Hotel is actually good. I love that movie. I think Royal Tenenbaums.
That's a great movie.
It's kind of like, eh.
I like that a lot.
I see why people like this. I don't like this one. Rushmore, I think, is fantastic. But Life Aquatic is my favorite.
I like, my favorite is Darjeeling Limited. That one is my favorite. With Owen Wilson, Adrian Brody, and Jason Schwartzman. They're the three brothers. Yeah. That movie's fantastic. That movie's so good.
I've never seen that one.
Got that one on DVD, baby. I almost watched it this week, but I didn't have time. But anyway, so the movie too. The movie was a flop. The budget was $50 million. It only made $34 million while it was in theaters. Obviously, I don't know if it's made up all that money since then, but it's gone on I think so too. With like merchandise and all that kind of shit. I'm sure it's made up for that difference, but it was a flop.
None of his movies do like fucking Marvel numbers. Like,
well, most
not
movies
even close.
Don't. Though. That's the thing. Most movies don't.
But like,
don't.
Not just Marvel numbers, but like the factor that Marvel does. So if Marvel's spending $100 million on a movie, it'll do $1 billion. That's a factor of what, fucking 10 or 100?
Yeah.
His movies, like, at best are making budget, or maybe at best doubling their money. Like, that's not even close to what like Marvel is doing and things like that. So he's not known for making movies that people are flocking to the theaters to see, but people that do watch these movies are like, yeah, that was a fucking cool movie. I like that. I enjoyed that. And Life Aquatic is, and again, I haven't seen all of his movies, but it's very different than what he normally does, because it's so dumb. It's so boring. Yeah. It's so drab. It's so basic. It's just so fucking elementary.
So like, just really like a quick synopsis of the movie. He does nature documentaries. His best friend, his partner Esteban, gets eaten by a jaguar shark. That's cool. Gets eaten by a jaguar shark. He wants to take revenge on the shark. So the whole movie is him trying to make another documentary, get funding for that documentary to find that specific shark and kill it. And then he ends up meeting his illegitimate son, who is Owen Wilson. And then it's just kind of the misadventures from there. So that's really the whole story in a nutshell.
But it's not his son, though.
Wait, what? Maybe I missed that part.
No, it's not his son.
Oh, maybe. Okay, then yeah. I guess I missed that part.
Because he's sterile. He that's not his son. Because it comes out later
on
that's
right.
He's sterile,
that's right,
and he could not have had a son.
Because, she says that, like, he says that he shoots blanks. That's what she says.
Yeah.
Angelica Houston says that.
But it's funny too, because in the very beginning of the movie, when he first meets him, like Owen Wilson's talking about changing his last name, but he just says, "Oh, I thought about changing my name." And a normal person would think like, "Oh yeah, changing your last name, right?" But because like Bill Murray, Steve Zissou was so fucking self-absorbed, he's like, "Yeah, you should change your first name." Like, who the fuck would change their first name? He calls him something
Kingsley.
So stupid
Kingsley
too.
He's like,
Kingsley,
I would have named you Kingsley.
Yeah. He's like, well, my name's already Ned, so fucking good.
It's fine.
It's good.
So I know we're going to talk more about the story as we go, but the soundtrack, I didn't realize that the score itself was done by Mark Mothersbaugh from Devo.
So good.
I had no
so
idea
good.
He did the score. The score is fantastic. First of all, it's a fantastic score. It's weird. It's kind of quirky, but I mean, what do you expect? It's Mark Mothersbaugh. And then how do you pronounce his name? Sue George. I don't know how to pronounce his name.
So like, I actually looked it up this week because we always just said Sue George because it was funny.
Yeah.
And then like friend of the pod, Annie, like corrected us one time, long time ago. I don't know if you remember.
I don't remember now.
But she like made a point. She's like, you know, like it's funny. I know what you guys do. It's funny, but it's actually pronounced Sway Jorge. And so I was like, okay, I get that possibly. But then I looked it up this week. I think it's Sue Jorge.
Is it Sue Jorge?
I don't think the S-E-U is pronounced Sway. I think that's actually pronounced Sue.
Okay. All right.
From my brief one Google search. So I think how you would say it is Sue Jorge.
Sue Jorge.
So Annie, it's not Sway. Unless it is, don't look like a fucking asshole. Yeah,
which is, you know, it's not out of character for you. So yeah, he does. So he does a lot of renditions of David Bowie songs, done in like a samba Brazilian kind of style. Is Brazilian even a style? No, it's not. But be like,
yeah, Brazilian style, sure.
Samba, bossa nova, you know, that kind of stuff. And the covers are great. And honestly, some of them are better than David Bowie, the David Bowie originals. Because this week, I listened to these David Bowie originals, and outside of one of them, I don't give a fuck. Or two of them.
Which one did you like the most?
I would say, actually, I'm sorry, two of them. There's two of them that I like, that I genuinely
Which
like.
Ones?
And that's Rebel Rebel, because, I mean,
yes,
that guitar lick.
Fucking so
That
good.
Rolling Stones guitar lick. It's Rolling Stones, man. It's Rolling Stones, yeah. Straight up.
Well, that's what he did. He tried to make it sound like Rolling Stones. He fucking achieved that. It's fantastic.
And then Queen Bitch. I like Queen Bitch a lot.
Dude. Oh, Queen Bitch is so good.
I did like that one. But other than that,
I agree, though.
Yeah, dude, I don't get David Bowie, especially the Ziggy. I mean, the little bit I've listened to this week, the Ziggy Stardust stuff, I just don't get it. It's way too theater kid for me. I don't get the appeal of David
it's
Bowie.
It's true.
I don't get it at all.
It is true. I agree. I listened to a lot of Bowie this week, thinking that like this would be my intro into Bowie, right? Then mm-hmm. I'll get more into it. And besides Rebel Rebel and Queen Bitch, like
it's like
anything. Life on Mars,
dude, I might as well just be listening to fucking Elton John at this point. Like there's a shit ton of Elton John in these songs, and Elton John did it before him. I think he did.
I mean, so like David Bowie, just like you said, it's theater kid music. It reminds me of like stuff that Queen did, but just did it exponentially better.
Queen did like better.
That song, Life on Mars, dude, that's Rick Wakeman playing piano. Rick Wakeman is iconic fucking keyboardist, piano player. Dude slays. That's not even like Bowie. The fuck
I mean, I know Bowie wrote, or co-wrote at least all the songs on this record or on the soundtrack. But I mean, he's a good singer. I mean, he really is a good singer, but some of his melodies are good, but they're just too much. It's too dramatic, way too dramatic for me. And grand. And it's not my thing. Not my thing at all.
It's all right.
Maybe earlier David Bowie is much better. But who knows? But we're going to have to take a deeper dive into David Bowie.
Didn't listen to it. Don't want to.
We're going to do a David Bowie record. I'm sure after Skip listens to this episode, who he loves, he claims to love David Bowie for some reason.
It has a fucking conniption fit.
We're going to get this.
Yeah, David Bowie.
We're going to get like an angry voice message from him saying, you guys are fucking idiots.
And he's walking his fucking dog in the middle of Leicestershire. What is it? Oh, Birmingham.
Shropshire, yeah. No.
Shropshire. It's like it's a place like a hobbit would live. Is that where they live, in the Shropshire? Or this is Shire?
Just the Shire, yeah.
That's where hobbits live. What the fuck is a Shire anyway? It's silly.
That's where Skip lives. But that's cyberbullying, dude.
There it is.
That's cyberbullying.
There's always one, right?
You gotta do it.
There's always
one. You gotta
do
it. So where are we at?
Terrible. So, at least now he can see like how kind of like bad we feel about it, like semi remorseful after it done. So yeah, there's, I guess that's something that makes it better when the bully pushes you down and feels bad about it. That's what keep going on the bully.
So let's get into, do we have any stinkers on this record, on the soundtrack?
It's tough because I don't know, there are no stinkers on this, but there are songs that unless you like the movie, then like why the fuck am I listening to that song? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Agreed. Yeah, I have no stinkers. I have nine bangers though. Nine bangers.
That seems about right.
Yeah.
I didn't list actual bangers. I just kind of like had notes on them because I really, really do love this movie. I like this movie a lot. I've seen this movie dozens of times, maybe even 50 times, possibly the years. I love this movie.
Do you own it? Do you have it on DVD or it's always streaming?
I used to, but I can't fucking find it.
Hmm. Okay.
So I don't know. Maybe in the move. I don't think I've watched it because it's always streaming. So I think since we moved out here to Arizona, I haven't watched it on DVD, but I don't watch DVDs that much anymore because everything's streaming anyway.
Nah.
And then if I'm feeling like really nostalgic and lazy, I'll just buy it or rent it on Amazon. I'm one of those people that will rent a movie like 35 times instead of just fucking buying it.
It's like, that's what like I Jake on Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And it's funny because I straight up do that all the time. This is cool though, because this movie got me into Sway Jorge, Sue George. that was my introduction to like the entire like Brazilian bossa nova, just City of God. Everything was because of this movie. I was like, oh, that guy's fucking cool. And then I remember he was doing a cover of Suffragette City, which the Get Up Kids also do a cover of. And I was like, oh, that's fucking cool. And like the whole soundtrack that he did on the side, I was like, oh, that's fucking awesome. Not realizing that half of these songs, no, actually all of the songs he was doing were Bowie songs. And I was like, oh, these are fucking cool songs. And so I just, that's when I got into him. And like from there, it was like a whole Brazilian thing. And that's like where I discovered Stan Getz. And that's where I discovered like that whole bossa nova scene. Mm-hmm. And then that's where I discovered like City of God and kind of just a better, I don't know, a better digestion of
you could just say better artists. Not
from America. But like it wasn't just better artists, because that's when I started really, because I had Netflix back in the day where they were mailing you movies. DVDs.
Yeah, I had that too.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where I saw this. I think maybe I originally saw this through Netflix, through the DVD. I got a DVD from Netflix.
This was in the time where, like, after this, I was like, okay, I'm really going to get into, like, the... I still kind of feel like that. It's like, I want to get into the Criterion collection of things and really watch, like, the greatest movies of all time. And so I was watching a lot of stuff that are, like, the greatest of all time. And Netflix was sending me, like, two fucking things a week. And it was just, I don't know. This was kind of the movie that got me into, like... I don't want to say better stuff, because some of the stuff that I watch is dumb and I think it's overrated and like the fuck am I watching? Just
do watch a lot of dumb
kind
shit.
Of expanding your mind type of thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I get it.
Yeah, I mean the zombies. This is the first time I ever heard the zombies.
But you heard Time of the Season. The
zombies. Yeah, but I didn't know it was the zombies.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah.
Nor did I ever listen to the Time of the Season. It wasn't, again, there was no Spotify, right? It was just like, let me just download a track usually from you. Because I didn't really do it a lot.
I was the one that pirated everything and then spread all the illegal or the bootleg pirated shit to everyone. Well,
we just tell you what we wanted and then you would just download it and then okay, cool, I got it.
And burn it on a CD, yeah.
Because at some point, like Kazaa got shut down, so then that was my ending to pirating, just because I didn't know how to use anything else.
Makes sense.
Yeah, this movie was really, really like my introduction to kind of like a whole different world of world music and cinema.
Yeah, I mean, like musically, this movie definitely got me more into the Brazilian, the samba stuff. I mean, because of this, you and I found Jorge Benhor. I mean, to this day, I mean, Africa Brazil, that record by him, I think it's a beyond perfect record. I mean, that Africa Brazil is amazing. And everything that Jorge Ben was doing in the 60s and 70s was just absolutely incredible. The best Brazilian music. I mean, I haven't heard a ton of it, but I mean, everything I've heard,
I've heard all of it.
He's for sure the best, top notch stuff right there. But I would have never discovered him had it not been through this movie specifically. But then when it comes to like indie, more obscure movies, I mean, friend of the pod, Annie, she got me into a lot of this shit. Her and I met in 2003. And, you know, she was very much into the indie art scene and the movies and a lot of underground music. And she introduced me to a lot of stuff. And, you know, this is kind of one of those things where it's kind of adjacent to a lot of the shit that she was showing me. So, I don't know. Yeah, it's a good Wes Anderson. And this movie specifically is a good jumping off point into like indie movies, underground movies and shit like that. Definitely is.
Yeah,
definitely is.
And there's a lot to like about this movie. Like if you take the movie in individual parts, like the pirate thing, like why the fuck did you even have that pirate thing in there? That's just, it makes no sense. It comes out of nowhere. It's kind of stupid. But the whole Jeff Goldblum thing too, like that's kind of stupid. It makes no sense. But there's a lot of cool stuff about this movie as a whole, like it's a lot of fun.
It can be.
You don't got to pick it apart, okay?
All right. Well, that's what we do. We pick things apart. So
it's gonna be so fucking mean all the time.
So fucking mean, dude.
Yeah. Anyway, Mark's because there's more than one. Mark's Mother's Boggs. Dumb last name.
Mark Mothersbaugh?
Mark's Mothersbaughs.
Okay. So what about him? What about him? He composed the opening song for Rugrats. That's what he's most famous for, is Rugrats. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Devo, dude. Devo, dude. Old, dude. I don't believe that, dude.
Because then we also get a Devo song on this fucking soundtrack. And God damn, that Devo song better be a banger.
It is. It's my 3B. It's my 3B.
God damn, dude. Gut feeling. That's from their fucking first record. Men? I'm telling you.
Yep.
I'm telling you over and over that first record is absolutely amazing.
I have that record.
Why you don't want it on the vinyl?
I have it on the vinyl.
When did you get that fucking record on the vinyl? Oh, I bought that for you. You're right. Right, because it was like $5 at Grace Records. I like forced you to fucking buy that shit. No, it was $7. There's the $7 thing. He's digging over here. I don't know where my Devo is. Damn, you're wild.
I don't know where
wild.
My
Devo is. Well.
Oh, it's after. Oh, okay, here it is. There we go. Here it is. Ah. There we go.
There he is.
There it is, right there. Devo, are we not?
That was $7.
I know.
Dude, that is a killer. That's a perfect record right there.
Oh, it is. It's amazing. It's amazing. There we go. Devo, Are We Not Men?
I have an OG UK version, which is on colored wax. Not a big deal.
Yeah, it's not a big deal. I don't care. Got him.
Okay. All right. That's fine.
So yeah, let's get into that song. That what is that your 1B?
Yeah, that's my 1B. I love that first record by Devo. It's funny because I don't like anything else by Devo. Over like, I think at best I'd probably give something like a 2 out of 3.
Okay,
but I would like nothing is over like 2 out of 3 for Devo except for their first record.
Yeah, I would. I mean, to me, the first record is a solid 2.5. I don't think it's perfect.
Ooh, dude, that's perfect.
Really, you think so? I mean, I do love the record.
I think it's perfect. It's perfect. It's punk rock.
It is.
It's like it's punk before like people even fucking really understood kind of like where punk was going. We're talking, this is like late 70s here, and Devo is actually writing punk songs, fast, aggressive, hard punk songs, but they're masking it just because, like, you know, their singer kind of like does this thing and Mark is doing the guy, yeah. Dude, it's heavy.
It's heavy. And that's, you know, nice. What with Devo, how precise they are. Like, their timing, and it is so crisp and it's so perfect. I mean, those palm mutes, those downstroke palm mutes, they're perfect. Everything is just so perfectly in time. The drumming is so precise. The 16th notes that he's playing on that hi-hat, it's relentless. It's fucking relentless. But it's like a drum machine. It sounds like a fucking drum machine. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Yeah. No, this song is amazing. As Gut ever. Feeling. It's called Gut Feeling, Slap Your Mammy. Mm-hmm. Like actually what it's called. But it's a surf song. It's a surf song done in like a more punk way. And they kind of just churched it up a little bit. But this is a fucking surf song.
Yeah. And that like minute and a half intro, that instrumental intro, it's so fucking good. Such a banger. Such a banger.
Good. Good, 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 good.
See, that's my 3B. Gut Feeling by Devo. Gotta have it. Gotta have it, though. Because Mark Mothersbaugh is the producer. Or not.
What's
producer.
Your 1B?
What do you think?
Oh, it's Rebel Rebel.
No, it's not. It's
wait.
Not.
Well, let me. Oh, it's got to be The Way I Feel Inside.
Yeah, dude.
There it is.
Yeah, The Zombies.
There it is.
The Zombie song. I mean, that song is incredible. I mean, it's just almost all vocals. There's some, like, you know, background synth and everything. Or I guess it's synth or organ, I should say. But. It's,
but it comes in after like 30, 40 seconds, and it's just.
I know.
I mean, this is my so favorite good. Zombie song. Like, this is by far none my favorite zombie song.
I agree.
It's from their first record. It's not even from Odyssey. And Odyssey and Oracle was like their best record, and it really is their best record. But damn, this song rips.
It's
dude.
A beyond
it's like a minute
banger.
And a half.
I know.
Nothing. In and out.
there's nothing to the song. It's all vocals, all vocals, but it's just beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. And in the movie, it's during the funeral scene, you know, spoilers, but, you know, fucking Owen Wilson dies in the helicopter crash, and they play it when they bury him at sea. And it's sad. It's heart wrenching, but love it. Love it. As you pour this lovely beer, this Michelob Ultra.
See, much like that song. That song doesn't have much to it. It's got a fucking stupid good melody.
Yeah.
But like his vocals in that, there's no range there. There's not a lot of instrumental parts to it. It's a very stripped down basic pop song. And in doing so, like it really shows you just how incredible the Zombies were at writing fucking good pop songs.
I know. They were great.
Also, after Owen Wilson dies, after Ned dies, at the very, very end, when they're going back on the ship, if you notice on where the crow's nest is, mm-hmm. there's a guy standing on the crow's nest that's not part of the crew, that's wearing all black, and he's standing and smoking a cigarette the same exact way that Owen Wilson was doing it early in the movie.
Really? I did not notice that.
A ghost of fucking Owen Wilson.
Yeah. You got to stop pointing. I did not notice that.
So good.
That's a good little thing. So good little touch right there.
Dude, how hyped I am right now. You just wait until I get more hyped for them.
Yeah, we're doubling up episodes. Ooh, spoiler. To finally fucking finish out soundtrack season. But
don't roll your fucking eyeballs. You want to keep going with soundtrack season? I swear to God, I'll fucking do 55, 34, 9 more soundtracks.
Okay.
That number.
The way I feel inside. Where does this sit for you banger wise?
That's my 2B.
2B? Okay. What's your 1B? Oh, your 1B was Devo then, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And we're pretty.
I fucking love that song.
We're kind of close here on our rankings. So let's get into your 2B. Or no, what's your 3B? Sorry.
Rebel Rebel?
Rebel Rebel?
Because get into that. I really do like that Bowie song.
It is a good song, man.
Fucking Bowie song.
It is a good song.
But it's funny because like it's 4 minutes of just that one riff.
Yeah.
Like it's just nothing looped. Ever happens in that song. Yeah. It's the most fucking basic, boring fucking song I've ever heard. But fuck, man, you don't fuck around with that riff.
But it also has that really driving drum beat too, that dat 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 through like it's essentially that's loop too. The whole song is just fucking loops. But it's good.
But he did write that in the hopes of like trying to sound like the Stones, and it's like, bro, you achieved that.
Yes.
Because that sounds like the fucking Stones.
Yes, 100%, 100%. I watched also. I also watched him perform this song on Top of the Pops back in like 1973 or something like that, or 72.
What, the eye patch one?
Yeah, the eye patch one. So fucking stupid. Pink eyes?
He had an eye patch on?
Is that really why he had an eye patch on? No way. Yeah, pink eye.
So he fucking wore an eye patch.
Wow. Stupid I didn't ass. Know that. But yeah, I watched it. And I mean, Top of the Pops is notorious for lip syncing. I mean, even up until 2005 or 2006, they were doing that. But in this video, you know, he's holding that guitar, no strap on, and he's just like playing like chords, but they're not even the right chords to the song. And he's like dropping the guitar and shit. It's just Top of the Pops was so dumb. So dumb.
That riff is his riff. Like he had That's guitarists cool. play with him and stuff. Like he wrote that riff. Yeah. That's him doing that. So like dude was a musician too.
Yeah, I do really like that. I do really like that. But yeah, Rebel Rebel is a great song. And then I mean the Sue Jorge, I mean the version that he does is I think it's fantastic. I really, really do.
Yeah. I really like it. I think it's great. This is the only time where I think like the Bowie version, like, damn, bro, like, nah.
Yeah.
The Bowie version is better. Every other time, even though I like some of the Bowie songs, every other time the Sue George is better.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I would agree with you on that. But
Bowie said it was fucking great too. Bowie loved that shit.
Oh, yeah. Well, he said that Sue Jorge did a great job, like covering all these songs. He fucking loved it.
I had no idea my songs were this great until like I heard him do it. They're fucking amazing.
But that's cool. But too. Also, like Sue Jorge gave this specific song like a bossa nova feel, like the whole beat. Well, I mean, there's no beat because every cover is just the vocals and the acoustic guitar, and that's it. It's very very stripped down, even like down to the recording. It sounds like it was done in some. It was recorded at a studio in Italy. I don't even remember the name of the studio, but it's in Italy. It's like, who goes to Italy to record a record? So, I mean, sorry to any Italians out there, but your recording studios probably fucking suck if it's, you know, based off of how this fucking record or these recordings sound, because it does sound
very aggressive.
I mean, was it?
Well, no offense to Italians, but your recording studios fucking suck.
Well, I mean, This is like a wildly popular record, and it just sounds like shit. Like, it just, the recordings, they don't sound good. They don't sound professional or anything. But that's what gives it its, like, it's the whole, its tone and the whole feel of it. I love it. I personally love it. But
I had this because they pressed this for Record Store Day like 2 years ago,
yeah.
And I bought it, and I listened to it, and I was kind of like, you know what, it's the filler songs. And I like Mark, I like our boy Mark in his mother's bog,
mm-hmm.
But like they're filler songs,
yeah,
like, they really are.
I know,
like they're cool filler songs, but they're filler songs, and I just don't need. It really, I bought this for like the Sway George, the Sway. See, I'm fucking Annie over here. The Sway George, Sway Jorge, the Sue George, the Sue Jorge.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go back to Sue George. I don't give a fuck. I bought it because I wanted to listen to Sue George. And I was like, no, dude, we'll just get the bootleg of the Life Aquatic Sessions. Yeah. And that suffices. That scratches the itch because I have the Devo record and I'm not a big fan of the Stooges. And I haven't come across Zombies yet, so I don't have that. But I don't know. I'm good. I don't need this on the vinyls.
Yeah, I don't care to get the soundtrack on the vinyl, but I mean, I was the one who got the Sue Jorge on the bootleg.
What store did you get
White Rabbit? White Rabbit.
I've never, ever, ever seen that anywhere.
They had three copies. That one day I went into White Rabbit. Well, they posted it on their Instagram, so I went over there right away to go grab it, and then they had three copies, and I bought two of the three. And it's a bootleg. But it's fine. It's like, it sounds great for what it is.
Yeah, I think it sounds fantastic.
And you know, it's a good package, and the record's a bright yellow, so it matches perfectly with the whole aesthetic. It just, everything matches perfectly. It's a great. Fuck, let me find it. Hold on.
Oh my dude. It's very nice, and I mean, Sue George isn't like the best guitar player of all time, nor is he like the best singer. And I think it's just the allure of him kind of just singing in Portuguese and being Brazilian and being a little bit exotic, like that. There is something there. It's something nostalgic. But I think, I don't know, reimagining songs like that in such a stripped down basic form is fearless and inventive.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't find it right now. I thought I could grab it, but
like the bounty hunter in Jedi, fearless and inventive.
Yes, Boba Fett.
Does she have a specific name? The Leia's bounty hunter name? Is there a specific name for her in Jedi?
Yeah, it's
she has a name, right?
No, it's because she stole the identity of another bounty hunter, but I can't remember the bounty hunter's name right now. I don't remember. Damn. But she's meant to be a different like a well-known bounty hunter in the galaxy that she ended up dressing up as. Or I think in the story, the expanded universe, she ended up killing. They ended up killing that specific bounty hunter, and she used their identity. But
do they kill that bounty hunter just so they could use the identity?
I don't remember it
because like not all bounty hunters are bad. Like,
no,
you know what I mean? Like Dog, he wasn't bad. He was a cool guy.
Yeah, that's true.
I guess I don't know.
That's an example, dude. It explains in the Shadows of the Empire novel, but I don't remember what it was. It's been a long time since I read that. Yeah, you don't read books, so it doesn't matter. But it does explain it in that book.
Books are dumb.
Anyway. Rebel.
Yeah, let's get back to
this bullshit movie, this bullshit soundtrack.
You really just don't like this.
I don't know. I really don't think this movie is very good. I did end up buying it because it wasn't streaming for free anywhere, and renting it was the same price as buying it, so I bought it for $4. So whatever. So I do technically own it, a digital version of it. But yeah, I don't
wait,
know. If
ever it is streaming.
It wasn't streaming as of like 2 weeks ago. It was not streaming.
What? Because
I ended up because I had to buy it. Yeah,
are you sure?
Yeah, I bought it 2 weeks ago because it was on sale on Amazon Prime. It was on sale for $3.99, so I bought it then. Whatever though. I don't know how you watch it.
That's a big coincidence. It was on Hulu.
It was not on Hulu. As like 2 weeks ago, it was not on Hulu. I swear to God. Ooh. I swear to you.
That's a huge coincidence. Then.
But there was a lot of coincidences this week. Remember the Guttermouth coincidence? You're like, oh, I found this mini grail. You know, it's so fucking rad. As I was listening to Guttermouth, you were talking about this that Guttermouth. I mean, there have been a lot of weird things happening this week.
Are there degrees of coincidences, or is it just coincidence?
It's just coincidence.
Like, are there big and small coincidences, or just everything's just a coincidence?
Everything's a coincidence. Reality isn't real. That's what it is. Reality's not real.
Okay.
Anyway, Rebel. Please don't do that.
Isn't that a bad word or something?
I think it's like fuck you or something. It's like, you know, fuck off or rip you. I don't know.
It's like getting scratched my fucking neck without like some fucking deaf person not getting offended.
I guess.
I can't remember what like sign language people have to do. So I was like, what are they?
You forgot what sense they lost. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, that's the correct terminology there. They're the ones got heightened though. He was in Daredevil.
I've never seen Daredevil. The Ben Affleck one? I've never seen it.
I've seen that one too, but the one on Netflix, that was good.
I heard that one was really good.
Fantastic. Charlie Cox. Don't laugh.
I don't know the reference, but okay.
That's his name, Charlie Cox.
Okay.
The actor.
Okay. That's fine. I'm not immature like you.
With an X, not a CKS.
Okay. You really had to, you know, drive that joke into the ground, right? Jesus Christ.
That's immaturity.
That's called immaturity, dude. Anyway, fucking.
See, you're so far off of this movie. You just don't care about this shit at all. That this is what we're talking about now. We're hitting the lowest fucking possible common denominator.
You're the one that's doing. I'm not even bringing up Cox or anything like that. You are. That's not me.
There's so much we could talk about. Like the fact
that
in the movie too. Just what about the color scheme? What about the color scheme that's going on?
That's something that Wes Anderson is really good at. He sticks to like a few different colors, and he really bases the whole movie around those specific colors.
Yeah,
the set pieces, the costumes, everything.
Like this one was different though, because it wasn't like boring colors. It wasn't just basic kind of like pastel-y looking colors. It was very vibrant, bright yellows and blues and purples, things like that.
That was good.
Very different for him.
Yeah. Was it though? I mean, at this time, I mean, was it his third or fourth movie? I don't think it was that different. I don't think it was that different.
Yeah, pretty different.
I don't know. So another song that I want to talk about, it's actually my 2B, and that's the Stooges song, Search and Destroy. Such a banger of a song.
Hey.
This does not sit as a banger for you?
Nah. I'm not a Stooges guy. I don't know. I've tried it. I don't get it. I know people love it. My partner at the record store fucking loves their first record. I don't get it, dude. It doesn't hit.
it's solid.
It doesn't.
I don't think it's like the greatest thing in the world, but I understand its influence on especially punk music. I mean, this comes off the record from 1973, and I think this is probably their biggest song that they've ever done. But it's a faster punker song, and the drums are very Keith Moon. The way he plays those fills and everything, it's not Keith Moon, obviously, but it's very much in that same vein, which is cool too. I mean, the influence here is crazy, because The Who were also like early punkers, which we talked about
episode. Dude, the Stooges, the first record dropped in like late 60s.
Yeah.
So we're talking like punk music, besides like the Velvet Underground, like the Stooges were there. Like they're creating punk music. They're shaping the shape of punk to come is truly what they were doing.
Yeah.
But I just don't like it. I don't fucking care for it. I don't.
Okay.
I don't know what it is. I think it's just, I think their music is just fucking boring.
Really? Come on, man.
Yeah. I really do.
It's not boring.
I really fucking do.
Okay. I mean, I think you're totally wrong on that one, but I don't think it's anything amazing, but it's definitely not boring.
There's nothing there. Like, okay, cool. So like 1969 is when their first record came out.
Yeah.
I get it. Right. This is like the birth of punk. We're seeing faster, more raw, more crazy instrumentals, and people are experimenting with concepts and themes. But like, I don't know, MC5, right?
Yeah, they were doing it.
Death,
too.
Like we've talked about Death.
Death came a little bit after this.
Like, why the fuck are we even talking about the Stooges when they're still kind of playing it safe here in the beginning? I don't know.
They were still one of the pioneer, you know, bands of the the genre. Can't deny that. And also Iggy Pop's like Velvet stage Underground presence.
Fucking any of the fucking week. Dude,
get out of here.
That's what it is. Iggy Pop. Like when people talk about the Stooges, they're not talking about the Stooges. They're talking about Iggy Pop.
That's true too.
Like every single time when people like mention how influential the Stooges were, how great they were, like what they did for music, they're not talking about like the band. They're talking about the Iggy Pops.
Yeah, that's very true.
And that irritates me. So he's a cool guy. Like I have nothing negative. I have literally nothing negative to say about Iggy Pop. Dude has been doing cool shit. He's still doing cool shit. Mm-hmm. Like he's, you know, for 30 years, 40 years. How long was he? 70? It's like 50 years.
Yeah, he's probably late 70s by now, I'd imagine. He was also
been doing cool stuff for 50 years.
Dude, he was
years.
Also in one of the greatest like kids TV shows of all time. He was in The Adventures of Pete and Pete. If anybody remembers that show on Nickelodeon, The Adventures of Pete and Pete, he played Michelle Trachtenberg's dad in that show. It's great.
That's cool.
Fucking fantastic. Like he was so good in that show.
I like that.
He was so good in that show. Oh god, that show is amazing. It's so underrated.
There you go with the fucking Pete and fucking
I don't care, man. That show is so underrated.
It's overplayed. I think it's overplayed.
Get the fuck out of here. All right.
There's a part in Life Aquatic in the beginning when Bill Murray's coming out of the water. Mm-hmm. And he's telling Willem Dafoe. What was that from where somebody said Willem Dafoe's name sounds like a frog and a bird talking to each other?
In the movie?
No, this is something completely separate.
I have no idea.
A frog is talking to a bird and the frog's just like, Willem. And the bird goes, Dafoe! Willem Dafoe! You know what I'm talking about?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
All right. Well, anyway, Bill Murray's talking to Willem Dafoe after Esteban gets eaten by the shark. And he's like, Esteban was eaten. He's eaten. He was eaten. And Willem Dafoe says, is he dead? Yes, he's dead. He was fucking eaten. He's like, was he swallowed whole? Like, no, he was chewed
that
up.
That part was funny. So, as there's, and then you see all the blood in the water, too, around Bill Murray.
So much blood. Yeah. Just like caught like a gush of like red everywhere, and I thought that was so hilarious. But there was moments of that throughout the entire movie where like things are just kind of funny,
yeah,
in the midst of very serious things. Also, like when Kate Blanchett's first interviewing Bill Murray, and she's like asking him hard hitting questions about Esteban and the death, and even at one point Bill Murray pulls a gun on her. Remember, he pulls a gun on her. It's just like, is this real? Like, do you think this is real? But the whole time in the background, that killer whale is like in the window. Like overtaking the entire thing. And undercutting like the intensity of that scene.
That's true too.
It's good shit, dude. That's good.
That is good. Also, when in the beginning, in that first documentary, when Bill Murray is going through everybody on the crew and who they are and what they are or whatever, and then they come to Willem Dafoe and he specifically calls him out for being German. It's so specific too.
What do we talk about today? Like the wildest thing that I've come across this week is that fucking Lou Bega is German.
Oh, I know. Why? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let's talk about that real quick. Kind of like actually a complete rant right here. Yeah. Why are you looking up Lou Bega, Mambo Number 5? You know, people who don't know.
I don't know how I got there, but I ended up there. And then in the wiki, you just start clicking things, and at some point, 20 minutes later, you're 15, 25 links deep, and I'm looking at Lou Bega. And I was like, I wonder how old he is now. Like, because that was a cool. I remember being a dancer to that shit back in the day. And he's born in Germany. Are you kidding me? I can't listen to that fucking song anymore.
Was he born like on an American base or is he actually German?
No, he's German. Stupid, plain old people German. Fuck out of here, dude. Come on. It literally like ruined that song for me. Like I was
weird. That
now I'm
German.
Like now I'm tempted to go look in the Baja Men. If they're not from the Bahamas, oh bro.
Well, the Baja Men, it's like the Who Let the Dogs Out that we know from like 1999. That was like I think the fifth or sixth like iteration of that group. Like
same with Mama Number 5. That's not his song. That's just like a Cuban standard from like the 40s or 50s that he just interpolated.
Yeah, see, I always thought he was Cuban. Yeah, I thought he was.
Yeah.
Cuban.
And so when I'm singing Mambo, you're doing like gyrations, like you think you're kind of like fucking, I don't know, Cuban. German? Are you kidding me? What? Nah, bro. I was very, dude, that like that hit me. That hit me hard. That cut me deep. That got
yeah,
me
I mean,
deep
you,
today.
You randomly text me that out of nowhere.
I was
out of nowhere.
Sad,
yeah,
man.
You were,
that one hurt. That one hurt.
I'm surprised you brought it up. I'm surprised you brought it up now. But
we're talking about the Germans and how funny they are usually.
Yeah, Germans are fucking funny.
I feel like Germans have to be funny though. Like, you know,
yeah,
like,
with their history,
like people are still alive that experienced World War II. So yeah. Like you gotta,
there's still, there are still Nazis alive.
You're like, still on thin ice, mister. You know what I mean? Like, you're still on thin ice. Take it easy. Take it easy.
All right.
Plus, like, bad guys are always German. I just watched Die Hard the other night too, and
they're
all German.
Yeah, they're all German. Yeah.
Yeah. Alan Rickman plays like a German.
Damn, he's a good. He's such a good villain. Such a
dude.
Good
Die Hard one was.
It's fucking great, man.
Perfect yeah, movie. Great. Perfect. Yep. Bruce Willis too. Like, god damn, the guy went from making dumbass fucking 80s jingles and dumb fucking records to being the fucking
an action
Bruce Willis,
an action
right?
hero. Yeah.
Damn. A
fucking action hero.
Goes from Bruno to like Bruno. I mean, I watched Die Hard 3 after because Die Hard 2 is fucking dumb, but Die Hard 3 is legit.
I've only ever seen the first one.
Oh. Yeah.
Never seen anything.
You never saw the one where Bruce Willis fucking with Jason Jason Bateman? No,
Jason Bourne. No.
What the fuck is
I
where he throws the car at the helicopter?
I've never seen it, so I don't know what you're referring to. I have no idea.
What the fuck is that Jason's name? He's Justin Long. Not even close. Justin Long. That's kind of close.
Wasn't that like the fourth Die Hard?
Yeah.
Okay.
Dude, Bruce Willis like legit like gets in a car, drives it really fast, jumps out of the car, it hits like a bank on like this tunnel, and he throws it at a helicopter and kills the helicopter. And Justin's like, dude, you just threw that car at the helicopter. He's like, yeah.
That was the movie where Ryan had the stick.
That was Timothy Olyphant.
Was he on
guy.
It too? Okay, in that too. Yeah. Okay. But that was yeah. Remember Ryan's car, his old car, the giant sticker on his back windshield. It was what's the name of that movie? It's Die Hard.
Live Free or Die Hard.
And Ryan had that literally covering his entire back windshield on his car. It said Live Free or Die Hard for years. For like
so
years,
good.
Man. Oh, it was so stupid. Man, we were idiots.
Damn, man.
We were idiots.
Telling you. Life Aquatic is a good movie.
Oh, yeah. Back to Life Aquatic.
There's really not a whole lot here. There's not a whole lot of meat to this movie. There isn't.
Right?
I thoroughly enjoy it. I do like this. I think it's funny. I think the characters are all quirky. I think maybe the reason why I like it is because there's such a wide variety of characters. Right, you have like the interns, and the interns are just treated like complete garbage.
They are, and then they end up
quitting. One of the interns is a regular on fucking Criminal Minds.
Really? I've watched a lot of Criminal Minds, and I hate that show. But
the guy with the intern who gets like right there, axe to the collarbone.
He's on Criminal Minds.
Afro.
Yeah,
he's like the nerdy guy in Criminal Minds. He's the guy that like is like the super smart nerdy guy in Criminal Minds. Yeah.
I don't remember in Criminal Minds. No,
but it's just funny. There's like every character on in the movie has like a specific purpose, and it's just like a gross exaggeration of that character. And yeah. Then like the lackadaisical kind of 25-year-old topless girl who is the only one that you think is like, oh, that girl's, she's a throwaway character, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she's there for comedic effect to be topless, but then she's the only one to say, bro, we should not be going into international waters.
Yeah.
She's the only voice of reason in the entire movie.
Which is so
that's
weird.
Funny. That's cool.
I know. Cause like the first shot of her, she is topless. And then like the
second shot of her, she's topless too.
Yeah. No, that's what I was going to say. Like the next like three or four, she's also topless. Like she'll just randomly be on the ship wearing no top, doing whatever she's doing.
Mundane tasks.
Yeah. But I mean, it's the movie's fine. I mean,
but it really does all build up to that ending. And the entire purpose of this movie is Bill Murray. He says it when he's talking to everybody. And they're like, why are you going after this shark? He's like, because I'm going to fucking kill it. And like, but it's an endangered species. Like, I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
It fucking killed my friend, so I'm going to kill it. As if like this shark has like this human attribute that knows that it killed
his
friend.
Knows,
it's a fucking shark. And it's not like a tiger shark. It's just, he said it looks like a tiger shark. It's just super endangered, like fluorescent. Looking weird shark that yeah. No one's ever seen. That may only be one of, and he's gonna kill it because he didn't give a fuck, and he's spiteful and he's an asshole. But through meeting this guy who thinks is his son, he goes through this transformation throughout the whole movie. It's just him growing as a person, and he ceases to become this adolescent kind of prick and grows into be like this kind of cool adult. Remember, he goes back for the stiff, the corporate shill.
Yeah,
they go back for him, even though he writes him off in the beginning. But he's like, oh, I can't believe that guy stuck his neck out for me. He's a homie.
Yeah, when they become friends. When he got abducted by the pirates. Yeah, the bond, what was it? The bond salesman or the bond.
What was it? So somebody from the bank. The bank sent him to make sure they're not blowing their budget or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's cool. It's a good movie. And in the very end, when he sees a shark, and they're like, "Are you gonna kill it?" He's like, "Nah, I'm good." Like, that's cool. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
But the entire movie we're leading up to this like end fight scene with the shark, and because he grew as a person, finds like that inner peace, and it's good. It's good.
Yeah, it's the Bond Company stooge, by the way. That's what they call him.
The Bond Company stooge.
The Bond Company stooge. That's what they call this guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's the one who gets abducted by the pirates, the Filipino pirates, but he actually speaks Filipino, which I always thought it was Tagalog, but I looked it up, and you know, Tagalog is
that how you say that?
Yeah. Yeah. Tagalog.
It's not Tagalong?
No, it's not Tagalog.
It's Tagalog.
It's Tagalog. And I thought that was the language of the Philippines, but I guess it's just a specific dialect of the country. But the Filipino language is its own thing. But I learned something new this week.
I learned two things new just right now.
You did. That you did. But yeah, the whole pirate thing was weird. And then also Jeff Goldblum, I can't, he's annoying. He's just
this is
annoying.
This is before he was like Jeff Goldblum as we know him today.
Where right?
This is
people like obsess over him. Yeah. Which is
annoying.
I
don't get it.
Like, I don't get it either.
The Jeff Goldblum thing is just like, dude, he's always been a shitty actor. Ever since Jurassic Park. I was like, why the fuck is this guy in Jurassic Park? Like, that is a perfect movie. Yeah. Jeff Goldblum almost drags that movie down with his shitty acting and his deadpan delivery. And he's not even a comedian, he's just a shitty actor.
Yeah. And then he was the lead actor in the second Jurassic Park when they come back to San Diego, remember?
Yeah. But that one made sense because he was like, why the fuck are we going back there? And why the fuck would you bring it back to San Diego? Because he's kind of deadpan delivery made sense in the second one. Even the second one's the worst of the original three.
Oh, yeah. The second one is for sure the worst. Yeah.
Jeff Goldblum's garbage.
Yeah, he's not that great. I don't even think he's that funny. He's just overly weird, and I don't care. People's obsession over this guy is annoying. It's really annoying.
It is very annoying.
He's not that funny. He's entertaining.
He's had this weird, like,
but
he's just had like this weird renaissance in the past like 10 years.
Yeah.
Where people just idolize Jeff Goldblum and like he's played in cool movies for sure. Like The Fly. You ever seen The Fly?
Yeah,
the original Fly?
Yeah, it's a great movie.
Dude, that's a fucking great banger movie. Of a movie.
Yep.
Jurassic Park's a banger of a movie. And Jeff Goldblum's cool. Plays in good movies. But like, oh, yeah, fuck. And he's dumb in this one.
And he's a dick. He fucking he beats the dog and shit too. Like the already
that was a weird part
like
too.
Like the three-legged dog. Like he goes over and just fucking hits the dog for no reason. It's like
hard.
Yeah,
that was weird. That was a weird part. I didn't get that part. He was like, "What's your dog's name?" And Bill Murray started trying to think of a name. He's like, "Cody."
Cody, yeah,
which is
it's okay.
That's a dumb name for a dog, Cody. People that get their dog name like that are like human names. Just I don't. That's just weird.
Like me. Rupert.
Rupert? That's not
that's a human name.
Rabbit from a cartoon.
Rupert is not a rabbit.
From the cartoon? That's
he's Rupert. Not a rabbit. He's a bear.
He's a rabbit.
He's a bear.
A bear.
Rupert is
Rupert?
A, yes, the
Rupert's not a
the,
bear.
The white thing with the red sweater?
Yeah.
That was a bear. It's not a rabbit.
Hi. Rupert likes to fly way up high in the sky.
Rupert. Just flips away. Rupert, it was all British. Remember, it was all British. They all had the accents.
Rupert's a rabbit, dude.
No, Rupert is it's a bear. Hold on, dude. Hold on there, dude. Rupert, I'm just going to write Rupert. Yeah, Rupert's a bear. Rupert Bear. He's a white bear with a red sweater and a yellow scarf, yellow pants. Rupert. Yeah.
Either way, bear or rabbit, it's still an animal. It's not a person.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, I don't know why Jeff Goldblum hit that dog. That was weird. That was a weird part. It didn't. It was a little out of character for Jeff Goldblum in that capacity because he's pretentious, but he's not a douchebag like that. He's just kind of an asshole. Yeah, I don't know.
And then they abandon the dog on the island at the end too. They're like, oh, sorry, Cody. It's like, come on, man. You really had to put that in there. I didn't like that. I didn't like that.
I mean, like the dog was the tag along people's to begin with, so they just left it there to go back with its people's, I guess.
Yeah, but.
But also, like I mean, just like another knock to the movie, just like the fight scenes. Like, are you fucking kidding? These are pirates, bro. These are ruthless pirates. There ain't no way you're getting the jump on them. No fucking way. And like the boat scene when they're like the gunfight.
Yeah,
it's like, it was dude, so these pirates stupid. Would have eaten your lunch. They get the fuck out of here.
They have the fucking rifle, the AKs and shit. They have actual fucking rifles,
dude. it's only Bill Murray. He's the only one fighting back. There's no way, dude.
They all have guns, just, and they make a point of it the whole movie that they all have guns. You know, then you see the guns on their hips and or on their legs and everything too. It's stupid.
Dumb movie. Do the interns get guns? No, they share one. That's what the topless girl said. And his reasoning for going into international waters is so dumb. Remember, he's like, you know, if we take your route, that's like, and he's looking at a map. He's like, that's like 4 inches. We take my route, that's like an inch and a half.
Yeah.
Like, are you serious? This is your captain? Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Anyway.
It's good.
Wrap it up. Here we go.
Yeah, wrap it up.
Ready for the record wrap up?
I'm ready for it. So, yeah, we didn't even get into a lot of the other songs, but that's fine. I just don't really want to talk about David Bowie because David Bowie's just, I don't get it.
You know what I really dove into this week too was just like all of the horrible things David Bowie represented to, and just like that
kind of side of him. I was going to, but then I realized I should wait and hold off on that until we do David Bowie on the podcast, which we should do next, maybe.
And it's just like, damn, dude, David Bowie's just like, dude gets a free pass, and I don't get it.
Yeah, he really
don't
does.
Understand why.
He really does.
Yeah, I don't understand why David Bowie can like fuck 13-year-olds and that's okay, but anybody else is fucking a big deal.
Yeah, it's definitely not okay. Definitely not okay.
But okay, whatever.
All right, so let's give our wrap up of the movie, the soundtrack, and then we'll rate the both of them separately based off of our world famous 3-point rating system, where 3 is a perfect album or movie. 2 is good. You're going to continue to watch or listen to. 1 is bad, but you should give it a shot. And 0 is the worst thing you've ever heard or listened to. So what do you got? Go.
This is, again, I haven't seen all of his movies, but this is my favorite Wes Anderson movie, like by far, not even a question about it. I like it. I think there's so much charm in all of these characters. And I think that's what makes his movie as a whole better, is because it's just, if you pick it apart, it's really, really shitty. And there's a lot of parts that just make no fucking sense. But again, that's like, it's like The Sandlot, right? Like, it's just a ragtag team of just misfits and nobodies and losers. And they come together for a common purpose and they follow a leader blindly no matter what. And like, everybody kind of doesn't really learn anything except for Bill Murray. But even him, like, he doesn't really learn anything either throughout this movie. Maybe how to just kind of like let shit go. But at the very end of the movie, they jump back onto the boat to go out and run another adventure. So it's just like it's a glimpse. It's a glimpse into the lives of these fucking losers that have nobody else except each other. And it's fun. And the soundtrack on its own, like, you know what I mean? Like, whatever. I think Sue George is great. I think he's better suited at doing his own personal music. Like, his second album, Crew, is a fucking banger of a record. He's doing Bowie covers here, so it's fun because, like, we know these songs, and so therefore the acoustic renditions, because they're in Portuguese, are a little bit more exotic. But, like, overall, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know. I love this movie. I really do. I think it's colorful. I think it's unique. I think it's fun. I think it's something different that he's done outside of, like, the actual, like, what stop motion shit that he's done. Which I haven't seen those ones either, but I like this.
Yeah.
I think the movie I would probably give like a 2.25. I think as a soundtrack on its own, I probably give like a 2.
Dang.
I think you throw them together, because soundtracks, dude, sometimes soundtracks can make a movie. So
yeah,
put them together. I think we got a solid 2.5 on our hands here. Solid 2.5.
Okay. All right. Wrong, but All right. All right. Movie wise, I did not enjoy this nearly as much as I thought I would. I remember liking it a lot more when it came out originally. This is out of all the, like I said, all out of all of the Wes Anderson movies I've seen, this is bottom tier for me. At this point, still Darjeeling Limited is the best that he's put out. This movie's disjointed at moments. The acting especially at the first half of the movie is pretty fucking terrible. So yeah, visually I think it looks cool. It's nice. It's typical Wes Anderson. This is right before he went full in on the colors and all the kind of things that made him Wes Anderson. And then, I don't know. I just, movie wise, I'll give this a 1.5. It's worth watching once. It's not terrible. It's not bad, but I'm never going to go back to it. I really, unless I'm going to do a Wes Anderson marathon and watch all of his movies, I'm not going to go back to this one. Soundtrack wise, I don't understand. We didn't even talk about this, but why David Bowie? Why are there so many David Bowie songs? The songs don't relate to the story. They don't relate to any of the characters, at least to my understanding, they don't. So I don't know why they wanted to cover all of these, or Wes Anderson wanted Su Jorge to cover these specific songs. I just don't get it. But stylistically, I think that the samba, bossa nova, the whole Brazilian thing works well with the whole aesthetic of the movie. I think that's fantastic. Mark Mothersbaugh absolutely nails it with the score and just the Devo song, obviously. And some of the other songs are absolute bangers. But soundtrack wise, I'll give this a 2. I'll give it a 2. I will give it a 2.
What if you put them together?
1.75.
Well, you don't just have to average it. You don't have to just take the aggregate.
But no, okay? But I know. But even still,
do you?
1.75, because the movie isn't that great. It's fine. It's not that great.
It's good. The movie's good. It's good.
It's no, it's a 1.5 out of 3. Soundtrack is 2 out of 3. There you go. That's what I got for this one. It's okay.
All right.
So
all right. Those are opinions, dude.
They're the right ones.
That's okay.
So thank you all for listening. Go to Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Give us 5 stars. Tell all your friends. Share this with everybody. Hit that or smash that subscribe button on YouTube. And it's all she wrote. It's all we got. So that's it. That's all.